Accession number 22658, Reel 13.
This is the seventh reel of a taped interview with Morden Digby in his home in Perth, Western Australia, on the 14th of the 11th, 2001, for the Imperial War Museum in London, and the interviewer is John Bannister. Norden, I wanted to ask you, you were mentioning before that the behaviour of the Australian troops, and you wanted to give an example in particular.
Getting into the subject of behaviour, this is an example, though naturally I wasn't a part therein, but when fellows come back from leave and that you hear all sorts of escapades, one that impressed me was that there were, as stated, occasions when through obviously the excess of alcohol, shortage of money, and the continued want of another drink, a plan would probably be set up whereby someone would reconnoitre around the cashier, find out the layouts, where the exits were and things of that nature, and where, if there was any money stored in drawers or small cash boxes or something of that nature, and eventually a plan would be put in, and these are some of the things that used to happen, or were said to happen. Someone would go up and cause a distraction to the cashier or whoever was in charge of the money facilities in the restaurants or whatever it may be. And three or four bods would move around a bit later on and cause further distraction, and then all of a sudden whatever wherever the money was kept, whether it was in a till or a cash box or whatever, that'll be snatched up and straight out the door they'd go, and then the other people would, the ones causing the distraction, would do their utmost to block the pursuing restaurateur or his staff from trying to catch up with the culprit, and away they'd go down the street sort of business. And if the MPs were drawn into the chase sort of business, then if they were New Zealanders or South Africans or Australians, there'd be unaccountable stoppages and blocking the chasing party. So away they'd go, and if they were successful, they had the money, and and then they'd find some other area to satisfy their wants. Yeah, that's the stories that would come back to us, which we thought we would have a good laugh about it, long as none of our troops were detained by the MPs. So there are other ones which I don't think we'd better go into.
It doesn't sound as though there was terribly much respect from both parties towards each other in relation to civilians or the returned soldiers on leave.
Of course, naturally they'd call upon the MPs, and of course there was no love lost between the MPs, and quite often there'd be fisticuffs and battenses and all sorts of things. And then finally cast into the boob or whatever it may be. And then they'd wait till they save it up next morning, and then they were either, if it wasn't too bad, they were released. If it was something that was overboard, well then there'd be the appropriate charges and things of that nature. And of course, naturally, they'd go back to the battalions and the regiments and their own particular units. So, depending upon the CO of the units, would whatever the crime was, they fitted the required punishment, whether it be confined to barracks, leave lost, or if it seemed, if there's injuries and things of that nature, then it could be going into the military jails and things.
How long was it before you were to then start to head back to Australia, do you think?
Movements started in January, and at the towards the end of January 43, we started movement down into Egypt.
Were you told, for instance, what you were likely to be off to do?
I don't think there was any direct advice given that you were, well, you're going home, but the rumours and the furfies and things of all that nature, and then maybe interspersed that we're going to follow back up the desert, or whatever. Some person might have wanted to start something in opposition, but eventually we embarked from the Suez Canal area and headed off to, through the Red Sea towards the end of January 43.
I wanted to ask you, on your way back to disembark on the ship,
yes.
Did you come across any prisoners of war from the Alamein show at all?
No, not particularly, because mainly the five, I think there were five ships, Queen Mary, Ile de France, that's what we were on, Aquitania, Empress of Bermuda, I think, and then New Amsterdam, plus the naval escorts. I'm not sure whether there were any prisoners of war on any of the other ships, but I'm pretty, there was none on board ours.
I was thinking more along before you actually left, and whether there were any prisoners of war in prisoner of war cages at all that you saw before you got on ship.
No, not at all, no. Not at all.
Tell us then about the trip home.
We went through the Red Sea. I'm not too sure whether coming to Egypt or going home, but you could see the damage that was done to shipping. And I've just forgotten the name of the port, which was a big Italian-controlled port. There were ships sunk there, which obviously would have been in the early part of the invasion of Abyssinia at the time. And then we just once we got out the Red Sea, away we went, sort of business. We eventually came, I think we had to refuel at the Dew Atoll. Now, I'm not too sure whether that's in the Maldives group, but it's somewhere in that vicinity. All the ships went inside, and of course they had a boom across. I'm not too sure. We probably stayed there for a few days, sort of business refueling. I think there was some sort of a rumour around that the subs were out after us, that that might have started a furphy from number five or train or something like that. But after that, we just flat out for Fremantle.
What were you aware of, this general situation in regard to the Japanese at that particular time?
Well, we were, what the sinking of the Repulse in the Prince of Wales, I think it was, we knew well and truly that their naval activities were concentrating around in these areas. Now whether we knew anything about whether the Japanese had a hand in the sinking of the Sydney, I don't know, but we were fully aware that they were about, and also that there were German submarines and possibly raiders more than ships of war.
What was the general feeling on board the ship?
Well, we were damn pleased to be on our way home, and we were all alive, sort of business. I mean, they had to keep us reasonably fit on board and occupied and things of that nature. I mean, I don't think there may have been lectures and things on jungle warfare and what to expect and things of that nature. But the main thing was to keep you occupied and lots of sports and things of that nature.
So you obviously had an idea that you were coming back to go off by the Japanese.
The way things were at the time, it was pretty grim. And of course, I think around about that time they were landing troops into New Guinea and the Milne Bay area and like that, and there were militia units going in with them, so that was they were certainly short of troops at the time.
What were the feelings then that you were off to fight the Japanese?
Well, I think the first thing we were interested was mainly getting to Fremantle and going back to our families and things of that nature. That would be number one. And we just have to pick up whatever information we had about the current affairs around the place.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that then. What are the thoughts of home?
Well, the thing is, like the country fellows, they would they would move away to their respective families and things like that, because that would then become an individual sort of a situation. Fellows living in the city may meet for a grog or something like that, and we were all given a certain date that we had to be back by, and if you're closely associated with your family, where you obviously would be spending most of your time there, and you'd be gaining information from them in regards to the trend of things government-wise and what was happening elsewhere around the world because of the use of communication, which we didn't have before, or in a minor way we did, but not much.
Before we actually get home, what was it like to see the coast of Western Australia on the horizon again?
It was really a great thing, and I think one of the greatest things was seeing the pine trees at Rottnest. Not Rottnest, at Cottesloe. Because when we arrived, there was disembarking, and of course if you had any loot or anything like that, you had to have it reasonably concealed sort of business, and naturally I think the top deck started to empty out, and and the rest would be down in the lower areas of the vessel. And what happened was in our particular case that there was a check on the gangplanks, just picking on somebody to see whether he had something he shouldn't have. So I think that there was a bit of hullabaloo about that, but by the time we got on the gangplank, they'd given up that. They're probably damn glad to see the hell out of the place. But,
what of the welcome home? Is there anyone there to celebrate you coming back?
I think from memory, there were some people. Well, obviously, the information would get out from somewhere, didn't matter how tight the censorship would be. Someone would all the tugboats and things like that would know what was going on. Navy people would know about it. They're probably not supposed to say anything, but they could hint. I don't think there were huge crowds or anything like that. I might be wrong, but I think all I wanted to do was get home as quickly as I could. And from memory, I think we were transported to Melville Camp, and that's on the Leach Highway, where we received pay and travel tickets, and for those that had to travel to the country, that was it. Once you got all those sort of things, really, you cast out into the street.
I'm very interested in sort of finding out what it was like to be back home, having come from a war situation and all you've experienced so far, just coming back and being in Melville and being in a place that had been affected by it.
No, well, from memory, I would say that, there was sort of curfews in regards to not so much about on the street, but as far as lights and any shaded windows and the things of that nature. And then, of course, the other point was that the Americans were in there then, so they were mainly naval personnel because of the submarine operating out of Fremantle or thereabouts. There was also the Catalina flying boats on the Swan River and things like that. So you just couldn't really divorce yourself away from a situation of war, and what with the Japanese, and I think a lot was concealed from us ships coming down the coast and things like that. And of course then there was a bombing of some of the areas, but I think they were just before we got home. But
certainly the Darwin bombing
down the Broome,
February 1942,
and
but to what extent did you know about the extent of those bombings? It wasn't just the once, was it?
No. Well, we probably would have got some information from home, from communication from your families and things like that. Somebody would get a newspaper sent to them, wrapped up in a parcel or something of that nature, or a cutting out of a newspaper. So, and of course then... we had a radio, or what we call wireless, and those things.
What was the level of sort of propaganda that you might have been subject to in relation to the Japanese?
Well, I mean, they were on a roll, so what with Singapore and all around there, I mean, you have to pay due respect to their capabilities or the capabilities of the persons in control.
How were those seen and described?
Well, the way they were moving into New Guinea and things of that nature. Then there was that, what they call the Brisbane Lions of business, that wasn't too well received. So,
what did the Brisbane line entail?
Well, I'm not too sure. That I think the powers to be decided. Now, I don't know whether MacArthur had any influence in it, but the thing was, if there's anything that was going to be fought about, it'll be Sydney and Victoria sort of business, or Sydney and Melbourne, or New South Wales and Victoria, or South Australia, something like that. But as far as it was just known as the line, and all the defence would be down south of that line, which wasn't a very pleasant thought.
What was the Japanese reputation?
I'm not too sure if we knew too much about. Yeah, I'm pretty sure we did get information about the cruelty and things that went on in Changi and then yet on the railway lines and things of that nature. We knew that they were quite ruthless and things of that nature. barbaric actions and things like that. So we had a fair idea that if we were brought into immediate engagement, you wouldn't muck around. If they got in a road, well, they'd have been disposed of, sort of situation. But
by that time, sort of February 43, on your return, what was the thought that they might actually come down to Perth?
Well, it was, semi-expected. Now, you could pick up information from the troops up from the north if they were down on leave or something like that, or in fact the pastoral people or farmers in some of those areas would have known what was going on because of the troops and things like that were in, like around Geraldton and further north and things like that. So those sort of things you couldn't keep quiet, but think the government, the federal government, sort of hushed a lot of it up, which is probably a good idea, because it would have set up a panic situation, whereas the people of Australia didn't have had anything like this happen to them before.
What about the reputation of General MacArthur? How was he seen?
In 43, I think some sort of respect for him, because at least he took control of things, and he was fortunate enough to have a fellow like Curtin that, well, Curtin did his utmost to save Australia, and he had to try and determine what's the best, well, let's say, article that would suit the situation. And it just so happened that MacArthur was around at the time, and, you know, if you ask me a bit later on, it might be a different answer.
Well, what were the, how were the Americans seen by the Australians?
Well, they sort of kept away from us while we were in the 43 League, because we had some sort of reputation that, you know, if you want to make it up rough, well, it would be on. But, of course, I think the thing that rocked a few of them was that their wives and their girlfriends had, had fallen for the Americans, and there were a few rough and tumbles about that sort of situation. And of course, they had accommodation, they had plenty of money, they had accommodation all over the place, and they could entertain and things of that nature, which I suppose would be reasonably attractive. If,
I read somewhere that there's that saying, oversexed, overpaid, and over here.
Yeah, a lot of other things too. Fortunately, I've forgotten.
Well, there was this question as to whether the 9th Division was going to put on this big rough and tumble with the Americans at one point, wasn't there?
Yeah. I don't know too much about whether it would have happened in the West. It might have happened in Woolloomooloo or somewhere like that. But you know, what with our population and scattered and things of that nature, and of course the sort of charitable organisation, but you know, Red Cross and the people like that would didn't matter whether they were Americans or Brits or Dutch, they would arrange for dances and evenings and things like that. So any lass that was single and up to whatever these the entertainers sort of probably drafted out who was going to be there and who wasn't, sort of business. They'd go to the six parties and things like that, or wherever their headquarters were, or recreational areas or something like that. So, I suppose you could really blame some of them, but it was pretty hard to take. But
so how did you spend your leave?
My mother and sister had come down from York, and they had a flat down in Adelaide Terrace, and the landlord was doing his utmost to get them out, because he could get more rental from them than from the Americans than from my mother and her sister. So I stayed there, which was, you know, centrally in town sort of business. But, you know, I couldn't sit in the room all day, so we'd like quite a number of others of us that was, I think, no, they were mainly our fellows and some of our old companions that were back in, down in Claremont camp, sort of reasonably class men and things like that. Well, we'd probably, in the afternoon, probably go down to the Palace Hotel and have a few grogs down there, and then somebody would say, what's on tonight?